Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are 14 days, yeah, just 2 weeks away from the opening ceremonies in Paris. Team USA has officially been named. 592 athletes will represent the United States this summer in France. 314 women, 278 men. 250 of those athletes are competing as Olympians for at least the second time. Three are five-time Olympians, four four-time Olympians, and 16 three-time Olympians. 122 of the U.S. athletes have previous Olympic medals. 66 have won a combined 110 gold medals. Katie Ledecky leads the way with 10 Olympic medals, including seven gold. Gymnast Simone Biles and swimmer Caleb Dressel have seven medals each. Swimmer Ryan Murphy has six. Swimmers Lily King and Simone Manuel have five. And women's basketball legend Diana Taurasi has five. We'll talk a little bit more about her in a bit. As for the full Paris Games, an estimated 10,500 athletes will compete from more than 200 national Olympic committees. And of course, you've got the IOC refugee Olympic team as well. They'll be competing in 32 different sports, 329 total medal events. And this will be the first Olympic Games of numerical gender parity in both female and male athletics. The U.S. men's Olympic soccer team was named. This is a U-23 team, all first-timers. 17 of 18 players on this roster played in the MLS or developed at an MLS academy setup. It's the first time in the Olympics for the Team USA men's soccer since 2008. All right, time to look at basketball. Let's start on the men's side. They held a training camp in Las Vegas that was capped off by an 86-72 exhibition win over Canada this week. Steph Curry led the way with 12 points. Team USA will have a few more warm-ups in the coming weeks against Australia, Serbia, South Sudan, and Germany before heading out to Paris. They'll be traveling without Kawhi Leonard, who during camp announced he would no longer be heading to Paris. The official statement said USA Basketball and his team, the LA Clippers, determined it's in his best interest to spend the remainder of the summer preparing for the upcoming NBA season. It sounds like he's been dealing with some nagging injuries. Team USA has already picked a replacement, NBA Finals champion Derek White. That comes with a little bit of heat from White's own Celtics teammate Jaylen Brown, who seemed to insinuate on X that Nike influenced the decision to take White rather than Brown, who, by the way, won the NBA Finals MVP and is sponsored by Adidas. He's previously criticized Nike, which sponsors Team USA. So Leonard's out, White is in. Now on the women's side, we mentioned Diana Taurasi looking for her sixth straight women's basketball gold medal. The 42-year-old has been sidelined recently with the Phoenix Mercury with a leg injury. And as of now, it appears she is still planning to play in Paris, but the injury has re-sparked some of the discussions about Caitlin Clark possibly being named as a fill-in if Taurasi's unable to go. Nobody from Team USA is saying that at this point. Taurasi, by the way, 42 years old, is averaging 16.6 points a game, 4.7 rebounds, and 2.6 with the Phoenix Mercury. All right, now on to Paris. The question remains, will the Seine River be safe enough to swim in come the opening swimming competitions there? The answer is, we'll see. Recent testing shows some improvement, but E. coli testing really does seem to depend on how much rain falls. The river had above acceptable levels of bacteria 22 out of the 30 days between June 3rd and July 2nd, including one rainy day that reached 10 times the acceptable level. We still don't know what the plan will be for marathon swimming and triathlon if the river is deemed unsafe come competition time, although it sounds like there is some kind of plan. We continue to chat with Olympians ahead of Paris, and this week we talk with Lauren Carlini of USA Volleyball. She missed out on the cut to make the Tokyo team and used that as fuel to get better. Now she finds herself preparing for Paris and her first Olympic Games. Tell me a little bit about how you found out, thanks. When you found out, and kind of all the emotions that followed.
Yeah, so we have a little bit of an interesting process here with the USA team for volleyball. We found out via email. And so to a lot of people, that's like, wait, what? Like, kind of impersonal. But for us, it allows us to kind of take that moment in, either by ourselves or with whoever we choose, instead of feeling pressure of being around others and teammates and whether you made it or not, like, it takes away that part of the equation. And so I was in California and got the email and I saw my initials on the roster and I was like, oh my God, LC, those are my initials. That's me. And so it was very just overwhelming. I didn't really have words for the first like hour when I started calling people. I was just nodding and saying like, yeah, like it's me. And it was just a really cool moment to be able to call the people that have been on this journey with me, for the last 7-8 years, especially, and just the heartbreak of the last one, and now having this incredible high from making the 2024 Olympic team. So it was an incredible moment, an incredible time, and the best part was just being able to share it with my teammates after. We had a little celebration of the 12 who made it, and of course, sharing those moments with my friends and family via Zoom.
You talked about Tokyo, and I talked to you prior to Tokyo, and we were gung-ho, and we thought everything was going to fall into place there. It didn't happen. So I guess my question to you is, and we can get a little bit more into, you know, the kind of the long-term impact of it, but what did you go through after Tokyo, but finding out that you were not on that roster?
Yeah, so Tokyo was a different beast, right, for VNL, which is the tournament that we do every year that runs from beginning of May to end of June. And so finding out in that situation was very difficult. And we got the alternates, had the decision to go to practice the next day and or not. And we just decided to do it. We knew that we were bought in, whether or not we made the team, and we had to be there for our teammates. And so it was nice to be able to say, like, hey, I powered through that. And it was probably the hardest practice of my life going through that and doing it the next day. But it made me stronger. And it says a lot about the other alternates characters as well, that we were just able to, like, put our egos aside and show up for the team. So we left and were able to go home and just kind of digest with our families and came back and started training again to send the team off to the Olympics. And so that was another tough training block, right? Like, it's not ideal being an alternate and just kind of working out beside them. But again, it was for the betterment of the team. And it was, you're doing a lot of that for yourself at that point. So my goal after that was, okay, how do I let this not happen again? And how do I set myself up for success moving into the next quad? And so with it being only 3 years, was me asking the coaching staff, okay, what do I need on a deeper level, both on and off the court, and slowly chipping away over the years and showing that consistency, that dedication, that rigor, I think is really what paid off here in the decision-making process that happened a couple weeks ago. So it was all worth it. It was really hard to go through, to battle. But at the end of the day, I can say that I have no regrets in how I went about things and how I kind of decided to approach it.
Talk a little bit about that feeling, because there are going to be people who listen to this. I personally I'm dealing with this in my family right now of getting cut from a team. There's a lot of people who are going to say, oh, well, you'll get over it, or look at what you've accomplished. But it's hard. It's hard to get over that hump. And I don't know if there's an easy answer for it, but you know, it probably puts you in a place where you've got to think to yourself, okay, do I want to do this again? Do I like this? Is this really what I want? Tell me a little bit about, you know, kind of what you would suggest to others who are in that position, because it doesn't matter if you're a little league baseball player mm-hmm. or if you're, you know, training for the Olympics, getting cut from a team is hard.
I knew that I wanted to go to two Olympic quads. So for me, it didn't affect my idea of wanting to go for another 3 or 4 years. It was more about, okay, how do I make this team the next time? And what do I need to do? And I think for a lot of people, when they are cut and they're facing those really tough times, they tend to go inward and they don't reach out and ask for help or information on why they didn't make the team. They just kind of want to avoid that conflict and avoid that conversation, when I think that's probably the most important conversation to have, no matter how hard it is in that moment. Coaches, mentors, they're going to want to give you that information because they see that you're a sponge, you're wanting to get better, improve, and make the team the next time. And so I encourage people who are going through a really tough time or not making the team, the roster that they're wanting, to ask those hard questions and have those hard conversations and take a look in the mirror and say, am I doing truly everything I can in order to put myself in the best position to make this team, to make this roster? Am I working as hard as I possibly can? And I think a lot of the times you're going to find answers in one of those two or three situations.
Do you feel like you are a different athlete for this quad than you were the previous quad?
I don't think I'm any different of an athlete. I think I have sharpened a few things in my game. At this level, the margins are very slim. And so how can I make those incremental adjustments in order to gain an edge? And so it was me just continually fighting to get better at the things that I knew weren't necessarily my strengths. And there's also this side of it where, like, I know my strengths and I'm going to continue to capitalize on those. I think if we only focus on our weaknesses, that tends to bring down our confidence. And we try to hyperfixate on that, when in reality at this level, it needs to be, what am I really good at? Find confidence in that, bring confidence to others, and how can I elevate the play of others around me? And I think that's been one big adjustment that I've made from last quad to this quad, is bringing others to this next level and helping them to reach this next level.
You're on a team that has very high expectations after Tokyo. First of all, this team is absolutely stacked. I talked to Jordan Poulter at the Team USA Summit. I mean, she was beaming about all, and at that point they hadn't picked the team, and she knew that you guys are going to be good, but you'll have a target on you. And do you guys talk at all about that going into the games, or are you just focused on getting as strong and as good as you can be?
Yeah, I think to the casual fan, it's like, oh, well, they won the Olympics in 2021, so they should win the next one. But I think for anyone who's been paying close attention, like, we haven't had the years since 2021 has not been as strong. We haven't won that much. We haven't medaled that much. And so it's been an uphill battle in a sense. And we've seen a lot of other teams get stronger throughout the years. And so we know we have a tough pool playing China, Serbia, and France. And we know what it's going to look like trying to get into that quarterfinal match, into those medal round matches. And so, well, I think there's a lot of expectations externally, and people in the media maybe saying, oh, they need to go and repeat. That's honestly not a conversation that we're having in the gym. We know that we have very specific things that we need to work on and improve. And I think for us, we talk a lot about not having expectations, actually, because if you have expectations, the disappointment that you have when you don't achieve them is huge. And at the same time, if you don't have expectations and you're just going in trying to play the best volleyball that you can, and you do achieve something great, that feeling, that excitement, that joy, it allows us to really, I guess, feel that and experience that versus just almost relief at, oh, well, thank God we did that, you know. Ooh. So I think that's kind of where our team is at. We're not really expecting to win gold. We're not expecting to do that. We're expecting that we're going to go try to play great volleyball day in and day out.
Can you play great volleyball and not get the same results? Will you still, if you don't end up on a podium, but you guys played amazing, I mean, is there still going? I mean, obviously there's some dissatisfaction, but I mean, are you okay with that?
Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, right, it's like, we were talking about this in one of our team meetings. If there's a team who is just having their day, everyone knows when they're having their day, sometimes you just got to tip your cap, because as much as we can control on our side of the net, there's another team on the other side that has a say in it and how the result goes. And so again, at the end of the day, we just want to say that we have no regrets, that we did everything in our training, in our game planning, in our scouting to be able to be as successful as possible. So I guess to answer your question, if the cards don't, no regrets and nothing left on the table.
Okay, well, let's talk about the things you are in control of these next few weeks. Mm-hmm. What are these next few weeks heading into Paris look like?
Yeah, so we had a 5-day break just to, if people wanted to go home, if they want to stay in California and get some sun and relax, that was up to them. And we get back into training here for the next couple weeks. And the Netherlands, who recently qualified for the Olympics, they're coming out here to Long Beach, and we're doing 3 scrimmages against them, which will be really fun. Shan's always show up really well in the Long Beach pyramid here. And so it'll be good to get some training in, but also get some competition in before we get into Paris, right? And we face, I believe it's China right off the bat. And so it's going to be an intense couple of weeks, but it's good. We need it, and very much looking forward to it.
What's the state of women's volleyball right now? I can tell you that the Park District in my hometown, the nets are always set up. The gym always looks packed. I got to believe that. I mean, even since when you were a kid, the sport seems
yeah.
So.
It's huge. It just keeps growing and exploding. And I think you can see that in the youth numbers, as you're talking about. You can see that at the collegiate level. And every single week in different parts of the country, attendance records are being broken, not only for in-person, but also on TV. And so the interest is there, the viewership is there. And I think that's, I mean, another part of this now is the pro side of things. And there is AU and PVF, and now one of the leagues that most of our national team is a part of, Love, LOVB, will be starting in January. And so it's like right time, right place. This perfect synergy is coming together in terms of the level of the sport and the interest of the fans, and of course, the money going into it as well. So we're very much looking forward to it. It's going to be nice to be able to stay and play on home soil at a professional level and just do it in front of our friends and family. A lot of us have been going at this for a long time overseas, and it's time to come back home.
Speaking of which, have you been to Paris before?
I've actually never been to Paris. It is my boyfriend's favorite city in the entire world, and he's like, "How have you not been?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I've lived overseas for 8 years and never made the trip." So I'm very excited to experience it.
Yeah, I what are you planning? Are you thinking much about, outside of the games, or can you only focus on what's going to go on the court? I mean, can you think about opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, maybe checking out some other sports?
Yeah, I think for me, it's, gosh, I've been so hyper fixated, right, on just like what our team needs to do better. I honestly have not thought about Paris that much. We know we have 3 matches, and then nothing after that is guaranteed. And so it's very different than previous Olympics where you play at least 5 matches that are guaranteed. So that'll be a different flow of the games. I'm honestly very excited just to be in the village and see other high-level athletes. I know Rose Lavelle, who played at Wisconsin, is on the soccer team. One of my friends who I know from high school, she's on the USA softball team. And so I think that'll be a really fun part of it, is seeing just former people that I used to know and high level athletes kind of all in the same place. I think that'll be awesome. And then I also have a trip planned in France, and in Paris after the games are finished. So again, I haven't thought a ton about it. I think that'll just kind of be wherever the wind blows us, but very much looking forward to both during the games and after the games and exploring just Paris and France.
Yeah. Well, and it's think about this too. You get to enjoy these games, whereas Tokyo, you wouldn't have had that same experience. So I also know that Grace Joyce is a rower who is from you, a lot of rowers from University of Wisconsin who I'm sure
Yeah.
you cross paths with at some point. So one question I like to ask to the athletes is, do you have any fun WADA stories? Have you gotten a knock at the door or been in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Gosh, good question. There was one I had actually already flown to Turkey, and I'm sure I didn't update my whereabouts or something happened in the system. And I wake up in the morning, to like 30 missed calls. And the new rules with volleyball is like they have to get in contact with you. They can't just leave. There's no like 1 hour window. They have to wait until they contact you. So, of course, I was in Turkey and the doping lady was in Manhattan Beach, California. So she had to sit in the driveway for 6 hours before I woke up in the morning in Turkey and saw my phone. And I was like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I am literally not in on the same continent as you. So that one wasn't great. That one wasn't great. I felt more bad for her because she had to just sit in the driveway for 6 hours and wait for me while I was just sound asleep overseas.
Sure. But now I got a feeling now with Paris coming up, you're updating that website every day. You know exactly where your whereabouts are. That mistake is
Yeah.
not. Where can people follow you online? Where can they kind of see what you're up to and what you're doing?
Yeah. I think the biggest one is probably Instagram. It's just at Lauren Carlini. Other than that, not a huge social media lady, but trying my best. So yeah, if you would like to follow me at Lauren Carlini on Instagram.
Thank you, Lauren. We'll continue to track her progress throughout the games. I'm Ryan Burrow. That'll do it for this episode of Quest for Gold. We've still got a few more interviews to get through as we march closer and closer to the games in just 2 weeks. We'll talk to you next week right here on Quest for Gold.